Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in-depth on a busy weekend and week ahead in politics. But first, our Monday conversation with the political junkie. And Ken is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Good morning, Carrie.
If you have a
actually Chapel Hill.
Okay, thanks, Ken. If you have a question for Ken about the president's executive orders, the ban on immigration, the protests, upcoming Supreme Court nominee, anything and everything, I know Ken can handle it. It's 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Ken, oh my gosh, what a chaotic, chaotic weekend. Do you think, let me ask you this, Ken, do you think the administration had thought out what the reaction was going to be when the president signed that immigration ban order on Friday at like 4:40 Eastern time?
Well, I'm not convinced they cared. I mean, maybe they expected an outrage, which did come, and they probably liked the outrage. But there was also he also surprised his cabinet. We read this morning that General John Kelly, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, found out about the order as Trump was signing it. James Mattis, who's the Secretary of Defense, was not consulted in advance. And of course, James Mattis was notably talked about during the campaign during the summer, saying that a ban on Muslims is absolutely unconstitutional. So it's interesting that the people who seem to be involved, the Steve Bannons of the world, seem to be outweighing his own cabinet.
You know what's interesting? I saw Reince Priebus on the round of Sunday shows yesterday, and he was saying that they had, you know, somewhat lengthy consultations with the Homeland Security agencies. And I think he was like, of course they knew this was coming. Did Congress know this was coming, do you think?
Well, I don't know if Congress knew. Of course, there are a lot of Republicans who are expressing outrage, of course, Democrats as well. But there was a quote also from somebody from the Obama administration. And if the incoming Trump transition officials were talking with their predecessors about this for months, well, there are a lot of people in the Obama administration who said they never heard of it at all. So the fact is that it seemed to be, look, he said, Donald Trump, said he would be decisive leader. He would take action immediately. And of course, he did say during the campaign that a ban on all Muslims entering the country, and of course, he kind of backtracked on that. But he did say he would, what he's doing is what he said he would do. He would act decisively, act quickly. And of course, you know, maybe there are courts and constitution that get in the way now and then, but that doesn't seem to be that didn't seem to be on his mind with that issue and that executive order on
said
Friday.
Tongue in cheek there. Ken, I did note that in your newsletter that you're saying he said he was going to do this and now he's doing this. Do you think even some of his voters didn't believe he was going to act this quickly on some of this most controversial stuff?
Well, I'm not convinced his supporters even thought he was going to win. I'm not convinced he thought he was going to win. And I, as you know, did not think he was going to win either. But I don't think they did. I think, look, when you're a businessman and you run a multi-billion-dollar corporation, you don't wait for Congress to act. You don't wait for Congress to have committee hearings and then come up with something. It's interesting, for all his criticism of President Obama with his executive actions, and he criticized that throughout the campaign. Of course, in fairness, Barack Obama criticized George W. Bush for executive actions, and he took them himself. But the difference is that Obama, in Obama's argument, he took action apart from Congress because Congress would not give him any support on so many issues.
Right.
Trump has a Republican House, a Republican Senate. He hasn't even consulted them with his executive actions on immigration, on the pipeline, on trade deals. And while this is exactly what he said he would do, he seems to be not patient enough to wait for Congress to respond in one way or the other.
Call for you here, Ken, from Bruno in Mankato. Hey, Bruno, hi. What's your question then for Ken?
Well, first, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is this. Of the seven countries where the refugees and immigrants have been banned, why was not Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Bahrain included, especially since 15 of the 19 individuals that flew those planes into the Twin Towers on 9/11 They were from Saudi Arabia. Mm. None of the countries that he has banned were involved in that attack.
Yeah, Bruno, let me, good question, Ken, and that's being asked by a lot of people.
Absolutely. It's a great question. Pakistan wasn't on the list as well, and there were a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people, but there are people coming in from Pakistan who have been arrested on suspected terrorist charges. You're absolutely right. I mean, the seven countries he names does not include the Saudi Arabias and the Egypts and the countries that supply the hijackers of 9/11. So there seems to be no answer. And also, it's very interesting that the leaders of those said countries, like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, have not criticized Trump. They may have done it privately, but certainly not publicly, unlike the leaders of Iran, Iraq, and the other countries mentioned. So this is a very, again, it's breathtaking, but also the fact that it's also breathtaking thinking of the countries that were excluded as well.
Well,
it didn't seem any, I saw no rhyme or reason why what those countries were included, others were not.
Ken, I think we also have to say that there has been plenty of terrorism planning going on in places like Germany and Belgium. They're not on the list either.
Right. And of course, those were the countries, especially Merkel said that this is absolutely not the way to go. This is not what American ideals are all about. And this can't happen. So and look, that doesn't account the homegrown terrorists who are already here, as we saw in Orlando and San Bernardino and elsewhere. So it seems to be a decisive action. I don't know how well thought out it was. It seemed, from everything I've read, it seems to be a Steve Bannon concoction that play to the base, keep America safe, but, you know, again, questions about constitutionality and long-time for example, there was so much chaos between the time he signed the executive order on Friday and then it was implemented at the airports by Saturday.
Right.
They didn't give anybody, certainly not the airlines and the airports, time to adjust to this. Why not talk about a policy and it'll be in effect on March 1st or something, but it was immediate and everybody was caught by surprise.
Do you think that thing of a delayed implementation, they were concerned that what happened anyway was going to happen? There'd be this huge wave of opposition. There'd be all these protests. Congress would try to get involved. Maybe President Trump just thought, you know, do it and do it now and let the chips fall rather than let people spend a lot of time opposing it.
That's probably true, but I thought it was very interesting as well that even in the immediacy of his actions, there were almost spontaneous demonstrations
at
the airports Saturday and Sunday. And so, you know, as quickly as Donald Trump acted, the opposition acted just as quickly as well. And so did the courts. There are at least four courts around the country that have put a stay on the order and just basically held up what the executive action tried to implement. But that's unusual for the courts to act that quickly. So both sides seem to be ready at the start to do anything.
Paul says on Twitter, it's my thought that the fear, uncertainty, doubt generated by the executive orders was an intentional feature of the release. Here's a call for you, Ken, about Bannon, since we've mentioned him, to Sam in Victoria. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I'm just really concerned about Steve Bannon and what your thoughts are and him giving such high security clearance and having the people who are really supposed to be in the room getting kicked out.
What do you think, Ken?
This is just remarkable. I mean, again, well, it's remarkable only, well, it's not, nothing's remarkable anymore, but the fact is, and what Sam is talking about, is that Steve Bannon is basically now a member of the National Security Council. This guy comes from Breitbart News, where he published, you know, a stream of white supremacist, anti-Semitic remarks and commentary from those out in the field. He's Donald Trump's top advisor, at least one of his top counselors. He apparently had a major role in writing these executive orders in the first 10 days. And here he is now on the National Security Council, where the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is only, as per incident. In other words, when he wants to be or when they want to be invited, but not a permanent member.
Okay.
It's
Can I have a question about that? I wonder if the reason for that is that President Trump doesn't want somebody from the, you know, or the chair of the Joint Chiefs sitting in a room and pushing back on decisions that he's going to. I mean, does he want more people around to say, I know how you think and you're right. That's what we should do.
Look, he remember during the campaign, he said he knows more than the generals do.
Yes, I remember that.
He said that he made that over, which I thought was interesting, given the fact that James Mattis, John Kelly are both generals. But let's see how the cabinet reacts. You know, I always think of, I mean, here I'm in North Carolina for some station visits for WUNC, and there was a huge crowd yesterday talking about all these things that are happening and all these questions everybody had. And one of the things that was brought up is that when Richard Nixon finally, I mean, this is so premature, but when Richard Nixon finally made the decision to step down, it wasn't because of the Democrats, it wasn't because of the liberals. The Republicans came to him and said, "We've had enough." Now, again, we're talking about 10 days, but when you have these seemingly impetuous decisions, seemingly without consulting allies in Congress, you can see that Republicans may say, wait a second, you need some kind of different kind of advice here.
I was going to ask you about that, too, because the New York Times ran an editorial on the front page, and the graph that really applies to the Republicans says this: Republicans in Congress who remain quiet or tacitly supportive of the ban should recognize that history will remember them as cowards. You know, Paul Ryan is on the record all through the campaign as being uncomfortable and sometimes opposing what Trump has done. Where do the responsibility fall to him now?
But not since January 20th.
I've noticed I know.
That's what's interesting. A lot of Republicans stood up and said there were a lot of never Trump Republicans. There are still never Trump Republicans, but those in power, the Paul Ryans of the world, still have to manage a Republican conference in the House that love Donald Trump, or at least support Donald Trump, in many districts where the voters supported Donald Trump and support what he's doing. So I always felt sympathy for the Paul Ryans of the world. But at some point, as you say, Kerry, profiles and courage have to come to the fore, and we'll see what Republicans stand up, as, for example, Barry Goldwater did in 1974 with Richard Nixon.
And a call here from Derek in Plymouth. Hi, Derek.
Good morning.
Hey.
Yes, chaotic weekend, a lot of activity. I just want to make sure that, and it seems like this seems kind of a, in the last 10 days or however long, it's almost a week and a half that Trump's been a president. We get these initial reports that are breathless, hair on fire, siren signals, and then we take a step back and then we realize 24 hours or 48 hours later, maybe it's not so bad. And the Steve Bannon stuff, talking about someone being kicked out, I'm not sure that there's any evidence that anyone's being kicked out of Security Council meetings. They changed the wording that a few of the members can be invited should they be needed. And I think the justification for that is basically if it's a national emergency, hurricane or, devastation locally, that you wouldn't necessarily need the joint or one of the two intel agencies to be present at the meeting.
So Derek, you're kind of saying you want more temperate and moderate reaction to some of what's going on. Is that what I hear?
Well, and always not putting spin on it. I mean, it is insane. I'm listening to the news, and apparently the entire country is against President Trump's choices and decisions, and I'm thinking, well, he did win the election, and I know
point
I'm
taken.
One person that voted for him.
Okay.
Where are the other voices here?
All right.
A little bit more discerning. Thank
you very much for the call. Ken, I think actually think that's a good point.
Well, no, I've been saying this all along, that what Donald Trump has done in the first few days about climate change and about renewing the Keystone Pipeline and the Dakota Access Pipeline and talking about immigrants. I mean, this is what he promised to do. This is what got him elected. There's no question about that. But when you say the thought of Steve Bannon on the National Security Council, that goes beyond just fulfilling campaign promises. And of course, when you think of who's usually on the National Security Council, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is invite only, but Steve Bannon is there every day. It's just remarkable. But in fairness to what Derek is saying,
right?
Look, there's going to be a Supreme Court nomination tomorrow evening. There's going to be a cabinet confirmations coming up. He will get his people in the government because, look, that's what he ran on, and the people who were elected with him at Congress will go along with it.
And here's the biggest question of the whole conversation, Ken, from Sean on Twitter. Why doesn't Ken have a button museum? It's a good question.
I do. I do, actually.
At your house?
It's in my mind.
That and crazy you don't want to know it's in chaotic my mind. Place.
But you know something? I have a lot of the buttons are displayed on my website, which, of course, as you well know, is krpoliticaljunkie.com. Thank you for letting me mention that.
Jeez.
And you'll see, you know, there are button puzzles and there are trivia questions and there are displays of buttons. There's the button of the day on Instagram. So, you know, if you go to krpoliticaljunkie.com,
okay,
life will be much better. I think so.
The angels will sing, right? And sunlight will pour down. Hey, Ken, I'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks much.
Supreme Court prediction, Neil Gorsuch. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of speculation about that. Good. And we'll be covering it, of course, with Ken Rudin on Mondays. Our political news conversation here continues right after the news. We've got two political scientists joining us. Yeah, we'll continue to talk about the immigration ban. Here's the other thing I want to ask you about. If you voted for President Trump, as we heard from Derek, and I know there are many of you out listening, I hope, do you think he's prioritizing the right things? Is he putting the key decisions at the top where you think he should? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Carrie NPR.